This is the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we'll have a review of Now You See Me, Now You Don't, Eternity, and then our topic this week is magic. Why do we love magic? Ta-da! Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow hoes, Troy Heinrichs.
Ta-dum.
Ta-dum-dum. And also joining this week is Kyle Nolan from NoReruns.net again. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
How is everyone? Do everybody like magic? Are you ready to talk about magic?
I think we have to define magic.
We're going to define magic.
Magicians or wizards? Like, what level of magic are we interested in these days?
I guess we'll find out when we get to the topic. Why don't you hold tight?
I guess so.
Put your belt on. Keep your pants on.
Yeah, I'm wearing shorts. It's more comfortable.
not in the Midwest in the winter, you idiot.
I'm not outside. I'm in my cozy little office with a fireplace, you know?
I guess so. Oh, did you see, there's been a lot of renewals this week by the time you listen to this. So Alien Earth has been renewed. Noah Hawley. You guys watch this one?
Yeah, I enjoyed that one.
Are you glad season two is coming? Like, you want to see more of it? Or
yeah.
Yeah, I think they ended in a way that's open for another season. So I'm definitely interested to see where they go.
They can tie it into Predator Badlands, since that's a hit. Yeah?
I sure could.
By the way, since our last episode, I have not seen so many people call a movie woke that made no sense to me whatsoever as I have with Predator Badlands.
I can't think of a single thing that was quote unquote woke about that movie.
Get it. A couple Facebook posts and there's like hundreds of that's woke. They just made the Predator woke. They just sissified the Predator. I'm like, he kills a lot in that movie. Like, did you watch it? No. You just saw something on the news, I guess. But yeah, apparently Predator Badlands is woke. The only thing I can think of is he's got a girl companion. Does that bother people? I don't know.
It's a girl companion that's a bot. And so the bots on the internet are the ones that are upset about it because they can't get with her.
I see how you tied that in.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. But anyway, Alien Earth is coming back and they re-upped Noah Hawley. So you'll see more Fargo as well. So that's exciting if you're a fan. Another thing that they're doing, which actually was kind of surprising, that they didn't announce it on November 5th. They waited like a week. But V for Vendetta is being developed as a series. So it was confirmed by Variety. This is the comic that was written by Alan Moore and illustrated by David Lloyd. The story is set in Britain in a dystopian, not too distant future in which the country is controlled by the, you know, fascist Northfire party. An anarchist named V, known for his distinctive Guy Fawkes mask, he seeks to topple the government with the help of Evie Hammond, a young woman V rescued from the country's secret police. Now, if you saw the movie, it had Natalie Portman. Great, great movie. I could see this working as a series, actually. And, you know, timely around the world, so to speak.
Now, I forget, the movie compared to the original comics, like, do they have to shorten it for the movie? You know, they touch on certain parts, so will the TV series actually get more in-depth than what the movie showed us?
Well, it's Alan Moore, so it's very political. I mean, that's just how he writes. I know the Wachowskis were deeply involved in the original movie. I think the comic, there's a lot more to be fleshed out. And I think you could have, like, a lot of that stuff is rushed. If you remember the movie, like, I mean, her journey was kind of rushed. So I think they could really stretch that out a little bit more.
For sure. I think it's good, though. I mean, it's a property that's been gone long enough that bringing it back now kind of ties together the kind of two eras, like we'll remember the movie and the comics. And so like watching a series is kind of cool because then we get to watch it with our kids and it kind of keeps that franchise, I guess, if you will, moving on through generations. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it all comes together, especially in the current political climate now, like if this like resonates or if this is too close to home. I think it's perfect timing for the conversation at least.
Yeah, I know I saw the movie, but I don't remember a single thing about it except for the mask. So it'll be going in fresh on the TV show for me.
Well, you know what makes me upset about that movie? is when people bring up remember the 5th of November, they all think it's from the movie. And it's like, no, that's actually from history. But I guess we don't teach that anymore. So drives me nuts. Because every year, like on the 5th of November, you'll see 1,000 memes and quotes, and you'll talk to friends that are cinephiles, and they're like, oh man, that was a great line from that movie. I'm like, it's not a freaking read a book. My God. Like a real book, not just a comic book. Not knocking comic books. Got a whole stack of them. Woosah. Sorry, I went on a bit of a tear.
It's okay. Just don't tear the pages.
Such a dork. Are we done yet? Is this podcast over yet?
You know it.
I feel like it just started. Oh, my God. All right. Well, hey, we're moving on to some more TV news. Hey, Kyle, you do a lot of TV reviews. Like, you get sent a lot of these TV shows. I assume you watch a ton of them every time they premiere, right? Like Troy does.
Oh, I try to watch everything, at least the first episode when it premieres. But lately, that's been much harder to do with the sheer quantity
volume.
Of
the stuff. Volume. Yeah.
Well, here we've had, and this is why I kind of bring this up. So, like, two new shows that are coming out have had massive showrunner trouble. The first one is Memory of a Killer, which is already filming episode 6 of the 10 episodes by the time you hear this. And the project developers, the British writers Ed Whitmore and Tracy Malone, plus New Amsterdam creator David Schulner, he was part of this too. They all three stepped down as the showrunners. And then taking over is Aaron Zellman from Resurrection, which I think you know, Troy.
We interviewed him.
Yeah, you interviewed him. And Glenn Kessler from Bloodline. And then over on CIA, lead actress Michael Michelle left as the chief of staff for the series. Executive producer Eric LaSalle from ER, he left. And now the second showrunner on CIA, Warren Light, who replaced the original showrunner, is leaving, and FBI showrunner Mike Weiss is having to come on board and write this ship. I don't care what you actually think about these shows and whatnot. It's just more about, like, how does this put you off of a new show knowing that they already have that much turmoil? Do you even want to watch it at that point, or is it like more of a train wreck situation where now you have to see it?
For me, it makes me less interested knowing that they're changing these people mid-season, especially like the first season. So is it going to just feel strange watching this? Like, if you're changing the showrunner halfway through an episode 6, like, so what's going to happen? 5 episodes and then it's going to go in a completely different direction for the rest of the season? Like, I can understand changing the showrunner after a season, but changing 3 or... Was it 4 times?
Like, well, three times on CIA. 3 times on CIA.
In the same first season, it seems like they just have no idea what they want to do.
That's exactly what it sounds like, yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, these shows aren't the typical, like, streamer show. They're not the heavy serialized type of show where you have a guy who thought up of a really creative idea then has to see that idea out over 13, 26, 80, 120 episodes, right? These are like your case of the week type shows. So really any showrunner could come in and do kind of case of the week stuff. So I think from that perspective, this doesn't bother me as much, just to know that there's actual people that have run shows before can still run the show, like Aaron Zellman or Eric Kripke, or, you know, people like of that nature that could just come in and pick up, you know, the task, because, you know, running a procedural isn't exactly difficult at the end of the day.
Well, I think Memory of a Killer is a little more serialized. That one is. I think they're going episode to episode, like a continued storyline. So that might be more affected. But you're right. By episode 6, they should have a through line. And I think that one sounded more like they weren't getting the scripts in on time, is what it sounds like. But still, I just think anytime you change course, your direction is going to shift, right? It's going to be a different vision by the end of it than when you started. And then how do you know if you still want to? I'm already irritated whenever I get invested in a show and then it doesn't get picked up. Now I got to worry about it's a completely different show midway. That sucks. That's all I'm saying.
Or there's like an agreement, you know, that this is the general direction of the first season. After that season, you can take it wherever you want. That way it still seems cohesive to the story that was already broke.
Yeah.
But it happens all the time, right? You submit like you know, we talked about it with Bokenkamp, right? When he did the movie with Angelina Jolie.
Where, taking lives,
right? Mm-hmm. Like, he wrote the script, and then by the time we see the finished product, it's still John's movie, but it's been totally like changed up, rewritten by a bunch of people that have come in and tweaked it a little bit over time, right? So it's not like there isn't help that comes along in this business as things progress.
Help. That's a nice way to put that one.
Yeah. How many of these people leaving was volunteering or?
I mean, three of them are leaving at the same time, either they're just like not going to deal with that nonsense of the network or they were let go. It's one of the two. It isn't like we're creative differences. That's not creative differences. That's we are not aligned in any way, shape or form.
In the HR world, we call that mutual resignation.
That's a nice way to put it. That's very polite.
This is really interesting, and I put this in here even though it happened right after we recorded the episode. But it was announced that Peacock's not going forward with Poker Face for season 3 with Natasha Lyonne. Okay, sad. I'm a big fan of Poker Face. Agreed. But this is that's where it takes a little twist, like the show. I do agree. Season 2 was a step down from season 1, number 1, before anyone comes at me. It tried a little too hard to be a little too crazy instead of just telling a really good murder mystery. I think that second season showed that. But apparently it wasn't the ratings. The ratings did dip a little bit. But what the issue with Peacock was is that the budget for a Columbo-type show had gotten too astronomical to support the episodes. So, okay, they're walking away from Peacock. But what... Here's the twist. Rian Johnson is actually who created it. He created the Knives Out franchise, in case you don't know, but he also created and wrote a lot of Poker Face and was one of the showrunners with Natasha Lyonne. Those two are shopping the show around, but not with Natasha Lyonne in the driver's seat anymore of that sweet Barracuda. Instead, I'm not making this up. I swear to God, this isn't fake news. They're shopping it around as if a new actor takes over for the character of Charlie Cale, the human lie detector, for each two seasons, for every two seasons, it'll be a new actor, and it'll start with Peter Dinklage as Charlie Cale to begin with. So the idea being that you got two seasons here of Natasha Lyonne as Charlie Cale, then you get two seasons of Peter Dinklage as Charlie Cale, and then you'll get two seasons of another actor as Charlie Cale. When I first heard about this, I thought it was insane. And now that I've sat on it and thought about it and pondered it, I know it's insane. And look, I'm fine if they recast an actor after they passed away or 10 years after a show comes out. But I mean, the show just came out. It's a very kind of unique character. Just make a different character that solves murder mysteries, man. It ain't that freaking hard. But I mean, there's 30 of them on the air at any given time. It's a wild concept. I thought I would share it. I like Poker Face on Peacock if you haven't seen it. I was a big fan, but I will also say a big reason for that show was, sure, the murder mysteries could be clever sometimes, but usually it was about Natasha Lyonne. Peter Dinklage is fine. He's a good quality actor. He's just, I don't see him taking that over, and I'm sure he'd do it, put his own stank on it and everything, but she made that show appealing to me, and it's not just because she's cute or anything. I just love the way she played that character. Without her, I don't even know if I'd be interested. But, I mean, we'll find out, I guess, if someone picks it up. All right, back to the regular show.
And then old Sydney Sweeney, her and her jeans, man. They're just always in the news. And she got crucified this past week. Her movie came out last week. And Christy, which, Kyle, you saw. Thumbs up,
yeah,
thumbs down.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was actually interesting. I didn't know anything about the real person it's based on, so Christine I was surprised Martin, by some of the right. twists and turns.
Well, was Sydney Sweeney pretty good in it?
Yeah, I think she does a good job with the role.
Okay. Well, the movie got crucified because it opened to like $1.3 million, which is one of the worst openings ever of an original release on more than 2,000 screens. I mean, it was just terrible. And so she got just crucified in the media. And I think a lot of it has to do with it's a political thing, right? People think they know her politics, even though she never really comments on them. But so they don't like her for that reason. It sounds like the whole jeans ad thing. I mean, but people are using that bombing to say that the movie sucks and that she didn't deserve to have the performance. And they're just using it to trash her, I guess. And I just want to just reiterate, like, I don't care what the box office is. It doesn't make a movie good or bad. I've seen so many great movies that flopped and so many awful movies that did incredibly well. So I just don't understand whenever anyone tries to make this argument.
Yeah, so many movies that just make billions of dollars on brand recognition alone, and the movie sucks completely.
Mm-hmm.
Or makes no sense.
And I mean, a bunch of these movies, people probably didn't even know there was a movie called Christie until these news stories came out saying that it flopped, because they probably never saw a trailer, never saw an ad, and just didn't even know it existed.
I'm surprised you knew it existed, since you don't even watch trailers.
I knew it existed because it was a mystery movie that I skipped, and that was the first time I had ever heard of it.
The Seen Unseen thing?
Yeah, one of those Screen Unseen movies, because I skipped it to see Nuremberg, which had a early screening the same night at the same time. So that was the first time I ever heard of Christie.
You were supposed to say the first time you heard of it, Kyle. You were supposed to say the first time you heard of it was when you were listening to our holiday movie preview episode.
That would have been too late anyway. It was already out then, right?
Notice you had a good train of thought, and Troy had to just completely kill it just to make his point, right? Now you know what I go through on a weekly basis. Like, this is every week for me. I can't even finish a thought before you... Welcome aboard.
But you didn't throw it in like an Apple ad or a...
Not yet. We haven't got there. Once we get the magic, I'm sure he'll have something like up his sleeve. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. But it's just one of those points I want to make, because it drives me insane. And it happens whenever people just want to celebrate somebody failing. That's really what it's about. And we play the box office game, or they try to justify, like, oh, this terrible movie isn't so terrible. Look how well it did. That doesn't mean anything. Or they want it to fail. And it woke, go broke, which hasn't been a saying since Barbie, for Christ's sake, as far as I'm concerned. But it's exhausting. Just like, if people like it, let them like it. I don't know what the problem with that is. Can't we all just get back to where we just let people like what they want to like? And if you don't like it, you can move on. No one's forcing you to throw your opinion out there.
And we live in a world where net income drives the stock market. I mean, that's how Americans make money, right? Is play the stock market, watch your non-GAAP net income. So box office totals are BS. It's the same thing as the revenue line. Just because I made $1 billion in sales doesn't mean I also didn't spend $1 billion. So my net profit is zero. Like, we need the net profit number of this movie venture to find out if it was actually successful or not.
I can promise you it wasn't successful. No,
it cost more than $1 million?
Yep. I don't need the full spread. I got this one locked down. It was not successful. But I'm sure she'll be fine.
Because that's the question, right? Was it good?
Yeah,
and Kyle says it was good.
Kyle said it was good.
Yeah, I mean, I could see her getting nominated for a performance.
Slow down. I've seen her movies. So let's pump the brakes there.
I mean, no, I don't think she's a superb actress by any means. But I mean, it was the type of, like, Oscar bait type of role with the dramatic role. And because I thought I went into it expecting it to be one of these, like, just like a, what do you call it? The
smashing machine? Like
No, just like the underdog boxing
story. Oh, she's going to come out on top. She's going to fight her. She's going to persevere. Rocky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know the other part of the story that's in there that is much more dramatic.
Oh, don't tell me. I actually don't know her life story, and I will check it out at some point. I mean, to support the movie. I like supporting it, especially when people tell me, when people are trying this hard to trash something, I'm like, I'll go see it now. I'll definitely see it.
Kyle, do you think it's better to go into the movie blind or actually read up on the actual person that it's based on first?
Oh, I would go in blind. I wouldn't bother to spoil some of the twists and turns of her story.
Of a real person's real life story?
Yeah. I mean, if you've never heard of her. Yeah. To me, it's still a spoiler if you're reading, like, the biography before you go see the movie, because you're getting all the highlights that they're probably going to cover.
There's a fine line. Is that a spoiler, Troy?
What, that the person actually lived the event?
If they already live the event, and then someone tells you about said person's life story, not what they saw in the movie, but it spoils what happens in the movie, is that a spoiler?
No, because, I mean, most of the movies that we see get made out of books or comic books have technically already been spoiled, because you get the information there. It could still change.
But if someone tells you how it ends...
But it would be the same as, like, if someone told you what was going to happen in the first season of Game of Thrones because they read the book 20 years ago, but you never read the book.
Oh, I would still consider that those assholes.
Spoiler.
Also, the story was never finished. They had to finish the show before the book. So technically, were they right? No. Maybe. We don't know.
I don't think we're ever going to know.
Only George knows.
I don't think we're ever going to know. I don't think he's never intended to finish
that book. Oh, he has no plans on finishing those books.
That guy is just jerking people along, left and right.
He finds so many side projects to keep himself busy just to avoid writing.
I think he's doing it on purpose because he hated the ending.
Maybe. I didn't hate it. I like the ending. I think it works fine. So, we've had that fight before. Before we move on from the outset in topic, though, I do want to say you can bring home the all-new Naked Gun on DVD, Blu-ray, and 4K right now. See Liam Neeson like never before, literally, never before, as Frank Drebin Jr., as he leads police squad in this outrageous comedy, also starring the iconic Pam Anderson, who I've said this before, she does scat. I think it's the best part of the movie. I think it's better than anything else that happens in the movie, and I think the movie's actually pretty funny. But man, her doing scat was one of the things I never saw coming. So you can buy the film critics are calling one of the funniest movies of the decade and get nearly an hour of gut-busting extras, including deleted scenes, outtakes, and a whole lot more. It's available right now from participating retailers, and it's from Paramount Pictures. So check it out. I would love to see a sequel to that, honestly.
I would definitely watch another one of those.
I would too. Just keep cramming jokes in there. Just cranking them up.
What was that, Naked Gun 44 and a fourth?
The fight where shows up. So good. Oh, so good. All right. That's all I'll say about that. So our From the Outset In topic, magic and entertainment. And I would say, I think if you just kept it at magicians, it'd be a pretty thin topic. Don't you think? I don't think Now You See Me is about really that, and The Prestige are about the only real movie. So I think when we're talking about magic, we could talk about magic, and you can use that to mean what you will. The Green Mile has magic. Lord of the Rings obviously has magic.
Harry Potter.
I mean, so magic is everywhere. Charmed on TV. I mean, there's lots of witchy shows.
Sabrina, the original and the remake.
Sure. All the Sabrinas, Whatever Anne Rice is doing this week, all the magics. So when you think about magic and entertainment, does it thrill you still? Or why do we even love it? I can tell you why I love real magic. And that's just because I'm trying to figure it out. I used to love watching David Copperfield on the specials every... Did you guys used to watch those?
Oh, yeah, I watched those.
We got to be careful, though. We can't necessarily call it real magic, because then the wizards and witches will put a hex on you because... Well, we just call it magician magic.
Okay, magician, TV magician magic.
Yes,
I'm not worried about. Go ahead.
I'm worried. I would miss you if you were gone.
Go ahead and put a spell on me. My name is spelled T-R-O-Y-H-A-H-E.
You can just stop right there.
Anyway, I used to watch David Copperfield all the time, and I was just dead set on figuring out how he did his tricks. I even saw him in concert, I guess if you call it. I saw him in performances of his multiple times in my area with my mom. We would go. And that's why I loved it. I just loved figuring it out, because I never thought it was real. I mean, there are people that do believe that he actually makes the Statue of Liberty disappear. I don't get those people. But
see, those bigger ones I never really cared for, because to me that was just I chalked that off as some camera trick. They just turned the camera and made it disappear. The audience that's there actually just sees mirrors. What's going on just and mirrors. Are just playing along.
But I like the smaller ones.
Like his stage show where he's doing stuff and you're trying to figure out how he's doing it. You don't believe he's really sawing this woman in half or making her transport across the stage to another spot, but you're trying to figure out what's going on. I mean, that's why I liked Penn and Teller. They used to do a show where they would do, they do tricks, and then they do tricks with all clear props so that you could see how they actually did the trick. So they would show you how they did, they'd do the same trick again, but with everything being clear so you could see through all the different things that they were using for the props. But then they'd still throw in a little unexpected twist at the end, you'd still be surprised because you thought they were going to show you the same thing, but they really did something different. But they showed you partially how they did the original trick.
Very clever, very funny too. They made it a whole, it was almost stand up what they were doing. It was so funny. Much different than David Copperfield. David Copperfield, he's coming around, there's smoke everywhere. His shirt's six buttons down for some reason. You know, he's just, it's borderline creepy, but I just loved watching watching the shows. They were always fun shows to watch.
Well, I couldn't wait when you saw a new one on the schedule. You were counting down the days until that aired.
And you know, he's worth like $1 billion, something like that, some crazy number. I mean, I looked up his net worth once and I about cried. I'm like, are you kidding me? From Magic? Apparently he just made the money disappear. Whoosh, in his pocket. Troy, did you like Magicians?
Yeah, magicians are fun. Like, I love, like, we actually have a place here in Chicago called the Chicago Magic Lounge. And so you can actually go there and see some of these, like, not like David Copperfield level, but you can see some pretty big names actually come through town.
Sounds like some upside down pineapple stuff to me.
No. It's literally traditional what they would call bar magic or restaurant magic. So in Chicago, a lot of the magicians would go around to bars around the city, and then you would like literally do tricks at people's tables as you went around. People are having dinner or whatever. They're, hey, can I show you something? And like it's all sleight of hand type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually have that set up in the lounge where you come in, you'll go to the bar. They'll do some sleight of hand stuff at the bar, right? There's like a bar magician. Then they take you back for like the main show. And then if you're pay enough of price of a ticket, you can actually get for like the secret show in the back room. There's like a back room where you can like see like even more magic after the main show is done. And so they do all kinds of stuff. I saw some really great tricks that I've never seen before. One of them, the guy actually took like my wedding ring and then took like two other people's wedding rings from the audience and then like joined all three rings together, like the whole like magic ring trick.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously none of our wedding rings have like cuts in them to do the thing, because one of the rings does have a cut in it. But it's like how did he do it? Like, and then he put it on a pencil and then he had it like fall off the pencil, like through the ring. And I was like, WTF. So yeah, that close up sleight of hand magic, I think, is some of the coolest stuff you'll ever see.
And card tricks. Card tricks I can usually figure out because it's usually math.
It's math, or the cards mm-hmm. are marked, or the cards have like sticky stuff on them. So you could have like one card is stuck to the other card, and then the magician can feel like which card it is as you're going through the deck. There's all kinds of ways to do the card stuff.
From the Upside Down Pineapple Club. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
And there's and what you're in the Chicago Magic Lounge, you can actually like check out magic books. So there are books that you could like check out and read and get in on some of the knowledge behind it. But that's the fun part, is that you like, oh, I've seen this trick before. The magicians that then take that trick to the next level and then do the trick, and you know how the trick works, and then find out, oh, he's doing the trick differently. That blows your mind. That stuff's great. And that's what you see on like Fool Us All the Time with Penn and Teller, their new show that they have.
So when it comes to like just that part of the magic, Why do you think there aren't more movies about that? Because I think Now You See Me is a fun series. Like, no matter what you think of the second movie, I think it's a fun series, and I wish there was more of that. I don't like the prestige as much as a lot of people do. But
well, I think we get a lot of that in like heist movies these days.
That's fair. Like con movies and heist movie. Yeah, where they're
like they play out. Yep. like you get to see how it was really done. Like everything plays out. You think it's going one way, and then they have that twist when you find out what really happened. There's been a whole bunch of those movies. There was like the Ocean's movies. Logan Lucky did that. Thomas Crown Affair. That I didn't care for the movie, but the whole heist scene I think was wonderful in that movie. There was a movie, a TV show, like in 2018 called Deception, that was like a magician helping cops solve crimes. It only lasted a season. Yes, he was like a David Copperfield like stage magician who was working with it might have been the FBI and solving crimes, and they do like the big like stage production to catch the people. It's almost like a Mission Impossible where they like trick the people into like they all of a sudden the walls come down, you see what's really going on. Naked Gun did a parody of that. That new Naked Gun movie did a parody of that type of scene where like they do this big production and trick the people into catching the criminals. But there were other shows like that like Deception that were in like the 70s and the 80s. I remember seeing some episodes of those on the Sci-Fi Channel when they would air these things. It was like The Magician with Bill Bixby and Blake's Magic with Hal Linden. It was the same type of thing with a magician who's helping solve crimes with the cops. Hmm. I wish we could get more of those shows. I don't know why Deception only lasted 13 episodes. It was canceled.
I mean, there was a show called The Magicians, but I never watched it, so I don't know if that was...
That was more like Harry Potter magic type of stuff.
Now, I guess that should... I don't know if we want to segue, but we should be able to talk about that kind of magic too, don't you think? Like spiritual magic, if you will, the whole cauldron and spells and da da da. Like, why do you love that kind of magic? Just to kind of tie it together, I guess.
Still ties to medieval times, I think. A lot of medieval stuff is still very prominent in story. You get a lot of the people that are interested in the fantasy world, especially if the world around you is like on fire. And we want to have some kind of escapism, like going back into that medieval time type era. And yeah, I want to have a superpower. So I'm not into comic books or that kind of superheroes. So why not be a wizard or a warlock or some other magical creature being that can do whatever they want to do because they have this ability? More and more people start to play like D&D or Magic the Gathering, some of those tabletop games. And then they want to translate that into entertainment and books and movies. And all of that combined really just showcases like the power of mysticism at the end of the day. And it extends, right? It's not just, spells and wizardry and all that. It's like, it's mind control. It's hypnosis. It's sleight of hand. It's pickpocketing. You know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on with magic, you know, even though we don't know exactly what it is.
Hypnosis creeps me out. Sorry, you went through all that, but I just want to point out, hypnosis creeps me out. I've never understood it because I've gone to places where they've had hypnotists and they try to hypnotize me and it's never worked for me. So I just don't understand. Am I just too aggressive in my brain or whatever? But it just doesn't work for me. But I see other people and they'll be clucking like a chicken and I'm like, either they're okay being a complete idiot or that worked. I can't decide.
Well, I'm the same way. I remember at my college, they did something like that and people were acting all strained on the stage. And actually we did one of those at my work once. I'm not volunteering to go up. I don't know if it would work on me, but I'm not going to check. But I always wonder, are these people just acting or are they actually really hypnotized? It just seems so strange.
Yeah, it's a part of the brain that basically just, it's like a subconscious section. There's like a whole write-up you can read about this stuff. But the key behind it is that your brain has a fail-safe mechanism that it will not do anything that you don't want it to do, right? So like if they say, roll around on the floor and you have a like severe like dust allergy or whatever, your brain knows like, oh, I'm going to have dust allergy. It won't do that. So there is like, your brain has this built-in blocker. So I think for a lot of people,
not in my 20s, it didn't.
but I think the built-in blocker are the people that have a hard time being hypnotized because they're not willing to just release a lot of the things that make them feel like, oh, I'm going to look stupid or I'm going to look like an idiot or whatever. Versus other people that could be hypnotized are like, I don't flipping care. Just you do whatever. It's fun, right? So the brain then gives that ability to be open to suggestion because it is more free willing. So it's not like, if you ask people to cluck like a chicken in real life, they'd probably be like, no, why would I want to do that? That's kind of crazy. But they're also open to the fact that they don't care in that moment. And so then they can cluck like a chicken because it's not like something they wouldn't do. They're just not completely closed off to doing it, where other people are completely closed off to being in fool of themselves, if you will.
I think what's funny is I'm not susceptible to hypnosis, and I've tried it multiple times. But if you give me about 3 shots, I will cluck like a chicken for your entertainment without batting an eye. So I don't know what that says about me, but I'm pretty sure it means I have a problem.
The alcohol is helping your release your inhibitions.
Yeah, probably. Just keeping it from getting too crazy in there.
But when you aren't hypnotized, it is a fantastic freaking nap. I'll tell you that right now. Because you get to the
point. So it's worked on you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been up on stage. Like at the Chicago Magic Lounge, we had a local... Well, he's not local. He grew up in Chicago, but came back through Chicago and did a hypnosis show. And yeah, I was totally up on stage doing everything he said. Don't remember a damn thing of it, but it's on video. So I know it happened.
That's crazy. All right. Back to Conjuring. I think it's like Troy said, when it comes to the magic, I think it's just because people want to feel like we have the ability to be superheroes at our whim, right? And that's what magic is. Magic isn't I was bitten by a spider or, you know, I come from another planet or I've got a cool costume. It's I can say these words and do this thing. And there it is. And I think that's what's appealing to most people about magic. And it's kind of like the, and I think that's why so many people love The Last Jedi is because it kind of like proposed, you don't have to be born with the Force. You can actually just learn it and become one with it, which is, I think, more accessible to people. They want to be able to think, I can be that person, whatever it is. Like that's some of the beauty of entertainment is being able to put yourself in whatever that situation is or wherever that world is. And I think once you can do that, it really makes a much better time for everybody. Definitely a much more enjoyable property. And somehow Palpatine returned.
Well, I mean, I think it carried on, right? Because you had, what was it, Donnie Yen's character, you know, the Force is with me and I am one with the Force in Rogue One. And he felt that spiritualness around him because, I mean, the guy's blind, getting shot at from every different angle, and he was able to, like, do Force-like things on that walk across the beach. You know, he's not completely bulletproof or laser beam proof or whatever you want to call it, but for the most part, yeah, he was able to sense his surroundings around him without having any midichlorians at all.
I think we just love the ability to help people or hurt, I mean, depending on your mindset, by using, and anyone can do it, by using words and conjuring and that, and it's cool. It's, I mean, I get it. These, you know, back 200 years ago, people would get burned for saying witchery was cool. But I think the idea that you can cast a spell on someone who's evil to you, like you can make them, you know, cluck like a chicken randomly, it is fun. There's a fun aspect to it. And I think that that's definitely appealing to people. And then also helping people, like you was a Green Mile, you watch Green Mile, and, you know, he's using magic to heal. And I think that would be what most people would want a power like that to be used for, is to help others. And I mean, there's a whole lot of appeal to the idea of magic, and I think a lot of it is just the ability for all of us to be a superhero without having to have some crazy origin story.
Yeah, or you get that boost of testosterone, serotonin, whatever chemical happens, right? Kids trapped underneath the bus, and you got to lift the bus, you know, and all of a sudden, like, two guys run over, and then, you know, and then the bus goes up in the air. You know, there's moments like that where you get that extra surge that's able to make you look like you're superhuman, but it was really just in the moment type of thing.
And it's also scary, right? It's also terrifying. You movies like The Witch and Hereditary. That's what I'm trying to think of. Mm-hmm. Poor kid loses her head. Just all Pet Sematary. I would consider that bad witchcraft. I mean, those kinds of movies. The Craft. I love The Craft. I'm not ashamed of it, but I'm also kind of ashamed of it. You know, those kinds of movies where they use it for bad, because you can't do anything. You can't stop it. There's nothing you can do to repel it. You're just stuck with it. And, you know, how do you beat magic? I don't know. More magic, I guess. It's always weird in Harry Potter movies. They're just like throwing their hands at each other.
You know? It's green magic versus red magic.
Yes.
And then you know.
It is. It's the last dragon. That's all it is. It's ridiculous, but also extremely entertaining.
Maybe like one of your favorites, the Big Trouble in Little China.
Absolutely. Big Trouble in Little China is definitely one of my favorites using magic. And my favorite part of that is that the hero is the least helpful person of the entire movie. I mean, Kurt Russell is absolutely not the hero of that movie. He's just entertaining.
Yeah, his hair was magical, but
I mean, his hair's always, it's still magical.
Right.
But yeah, that's a good example. I mean, Blair Witch Project, I think they do a wonderful job of not showing anything and still, and honestly, you can make most of it work as just, well, really nothing happened, but your mind makes it happen if you bought into the movie, which, you know, now it's cool to hate it, but at the time it was pretty impressive.
But that's 90% of magic, right? 90% of magic is getting the person doing the trick has to convince the person watching the trick that the trick happened. Right. So like in Blair Witch, they did such a great job of convincing us that this was going on. But at the end of the day, nothing actually happened. But we believed it. And that's all that matters.
So what are your favorites?
I mean, for me specifically, like, I love The Prestige. I think The Prestige is like...
Do you really?
Because for me, the thing with Prestige is that The Prestige actually talks about real magic and the whole concept of, like, you know, the setup and the turn and then the prestige and how tricks are actually done and the fact that they talk about the fact that the bullet catch is the one trick that's the most deadly trick in all of tricks, not walking a high wire or drowning in a tank or any of those big ones like that. It truly is the bullet catch. And so they incorporate the bullet catch into the show, into the movie. I think that's a great idea. And the fact that they do this, the magicians have to commit to a point where they just devote their lives to the trick. And the fact that they do that in this movie, you know, where he, the guy that does the fishbowl trick in the movie, you know, commits to it his whole life and how he walks that way in order to make the trick work when he goes up on stage. And then you find out like what the actual trick is that they're doing and how they make it happen, where it was just so simple and yet went to such great lengths to copy it. To me, that's a fascinating story as it goes on throughout the course of the movie. And like, what are you willing to give up in your life in order to execute the magic at the end of the day?
Wasn't it just clones?
Well, I mean, The Prestige, one part of it is clones. Yeah.
Which that's the part that made me not like it. Cause I'm like, so really there's no magic. Like it's just, it's rigged. It's
twins.
Yeah. But Christian Bale's character was magic. Like that was the magic part.
I don't know if I believe any of it anymore. I think they lost me. You know, that's Nolan's fault. I blame him.
Well, Hugh Jackman believed it so much that Hugh Jackman goes in as the character to go find out how to copy the trick. That's the beauty of the magic.
And make more clones. Yep.
He can't figure out how to do the trick. And so he cheats the trick.
Kyle gets it. Twins. Just
Illusionist.
Cheap.
Illusionist is a great one too.
The Edward Norton movie?
Yeah, because it's mm-hmm. it takes place like a, you know, further back in time. She's supposed to marry like a duke or a lord. I can't remember which one it is. And through the course of the movie, they don't want him to get married because the main character obviously loves the girl. And so they use magic to basically get her out of marrying the guy. And I think that's just a cool way to like leverage the magician aspect of it. That even the one character who's like the head of the guard for the duke or the lord is like actually impressed when he finds out what the magic trick really was at the end of the movie.
Two good ones. I think those came out at like the same time too.
Yeah, it was a big push in magician world. Was that mid-aughts?
Like, we're going to get all these magic movies out now, like today.
That's probably why Deception got greenlit.
It probably was. Yeah, you're probably right. Any other ones?
And I mentioned Penn & Teller, Fool Us, is always a fun watch.
Have you ever seen them live?
I haven't seen Penn & Teller live yet, no.
Great. They are great. I saw them in Vegas. They're great.
They were at Comic-Con last year, so I got to see them do some stuff on stage.
It's pretty cool.
Comic-Con.
They're very cool.
But I have met people at the Chicago Magic Lounge that have been on Penn & Teller multiple times.
I'm starting to think you really go there a lot.
I went there a lot.
Reaffirming that it's an upside-down pineapple place.
No. Last summer, I was probably there once a month for probably a couple months.
Can you do any cool card tricks?
I can't do card tricks. I can't do.
I can still do a card trick that I learned when I was a kid, and I've never met anyone that could figure it out to this day.
You flipped all but one card over.
Yes, I did that. That's magic. Now, it is basically, it's a math trick, but you can literally cut the deck any which way and it's going to end up basically the same. And it's very much a math trick, but nobody can figure it out. It's easy to duplicate though, but it's very hard to figure out. It's a cool trick. Cool, makes great radio because you can't see it.
Right.
Yeah. What about you, Kyle? Any favorites in the magic world?
I couldn't really come up with any magic movies that were like
Lord of the Rings. How about that one?
Real magic, rather than
real magic. Yeah.
Rather than fantasy magic. Like if I had to pick fantasy magic, I never really thought about it when I was looking at this topic.
Sure.
But I mean, I'd go with like the Harry Potter movies and things like that. But for me, it really leaned more towards the heist type movies when I was trying to think of magic movies. Like how to steal a million.
I think that's fair though. I think that's a fair argument. I mean, what you're talking about is exactly what magic tricks are. It's just pulling the wool from under us. Right?
Yeah, it's distraction. It's diversion. Look over here because you don't see the thing that's happening over here. And the thing that's happening over here is actually the thing that you're supposed to be paying attention to. So enamored by the something else.
What did that the best then?
One favorite that I've had for a long time is How to Steal a Million, which has What's his name? Peter
Dinklage?
He's a British guy. Old British guy.
Capaldi?
No. Is it Peter? He was in Club Paradise with Robin Williams.
Peter O'Toole.
Peter O'Toole, yes.
That's the Audrey Hepburn movie. That's a,
yes.
That's an oldie.
Yeah, that's an oldie. And then the Thomas Crown Affair. I love that that whole scene, how it plays out with the heist and that. The Ocean's movies. Yeah, just anything with like a heist and they, you think it went one way. And then when they show you how they did it, it was much more elaborate than you realized. I always enjoy that kind of like the, when they explain how they did everything and it wasn't what you thought they were doing.
Well, I respect you thinking outside the box.
Sneakers. Sneakers would fit that too.
Yeah. Sneakers would.
Robert Redford.
I'd go immediately to Evil Dead. I think that's the easy one for me. I mean, they're reading spells and bad magic happens. So it's not like a happy movie, but I'd also probably put, I mean, I'm not kidding. The Green Mile, I think absolutely fits there.
For sure.
And it's just one that I've watched that probably 20 or 30 times. It's like a 3-hour movie and it has yet to bore me. And it's a long movie. It's just so well done. I think it's just so well done. And again, I'd throw some Pet Sematary in there and,
Conjuring.
The Conjuring's not magic. That's
I'm just,
just cause they are conjuring doesn't mean it's magic. That's some witchy stuff. Maybe Field of Dreams. I don't know if that counts, but it feels like it kind of does.
I think that's the question is like, what's the difference between magic and like spiritualism?
Sure.
Right? Cause I feel like that's like a, you know, is this heaven? Right.
That's the eternal question. What's the difference for a lot of people?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is very much believing that something that you can't understand is real. And your mind is telling you that doesn't make any sense, but you also kind of want to believe in it, you know, and that's kind of connected. Spiritualism is tied into that. Not knocking anyone's beliefs,
except maybe
Troy.
No, because that's miracles, right? Change water into wine. That's a magic trick at the end of the day.
I wish I could do it. I would have a much better time at work.
For sure.
Be like, just water. Get out of here, Janet.
Make sure everyone sees you fill the water bottle. Look, I haven't opened it, folks.
I'd have a line outside my office. Oh, what a great day.
That's why everybody carries around the Stanleys and the Owalas and stuff, because you can't see what's in my cup.
Absolutely. That's the way you do it. All right, well, moving on. Our upcoming attractions. We recently went through every holiday movie coming out this season on our holiday movie preview, so go check that out because we put a lot into that bad boy. Okay, we do have two reviews. The first one is Now You See Me, Now You Don't. I'm the only one that saw it. Ba-dum-bum, ba-dum-bum. And we'll talk about Eternity here in a minute, which comes out November 26th, so it'll be in... That one comes out in Thanksgiving. Now You See Me, Now You Don't came out today, Friday, which is November 14th. Man, I'm a big fan of the first movie. I actually love the first Now You See Me, where the four horsemen come together, and it's Jesse Eisenberg and Woody Harrelson and Dave Franco and Isla Fisher as Atlas, Merritt, Wilder, and Henley. And then for the second movie, I think Isla Fisher was... She was raising a family, so she couldn't make it for whatever her reasons. And so they brought in Lizzie Kaplan as Lula, and she kind of took Isla Fisher's place. Well, Lizzie Kaplan's more out of the picture, and now we've got Isla Fisher back in the saddle. So what happens is the movie opens with these three wannabe horsemen, three young magicians who kind of use the four horsemen's legacy for their own particular motives, right? And then what it turns out they want to do is that the eye, that who usually directs them for their capers. And if you don't, I should say, if you don't know the franchise, because it is, you know, many, many years old now, you know, the first Now You See Me was over a decade ago. But basically the four horsemen are these four magicians who do tricks to basically, I mean, it's really a caper movie. It's really, really a caper movie. The magicians are doing this illusion to right a wrong or to bring down some kind of foe, whether it be a billionaire or a tech corporation or whatever it is. Like, they're just trying to make things right for the common man. That's like their whole goal, right? But they've been retired for a while, and these three
younger magicians, essentially bring them out of retirement to go after, or they don't, but the eye, you know, who directs them. It's a weird organization. I wish they would have dropped that completely, but it is part of the lore. And the young ones are Justice Smith as Charlie, Dominic Sessa as Bosco, and Ariana Greenblatt as June. They want to go after Veronica Vanderberg, who's played by Rosamund Pike, very much an Elon Musk type billionaire, who's a diamond heiress, and they want to stick it to her by taking their family heirloom, the heart diamond. And so they're going after that, and of course, you know, you might get cameos from previous performances of actors who've been in the movie as you go on. Maybe you won't. I don't know. I'm not going to tell you. But that's the plot, I mean, essentially. And I don't want to... It's hard with this kind of movie because it's very much about the reveals, right? Like, that's the excitement of watching this franchise, is you want to see the reveals and you want to see the magic play out and you want to see how it goes. I will say, performance-wise, so I can't tell you too much about the movie, but I'm going to tell you something without spoiling anything. So Jesse Eisenberg as Atlas, he's Jesse Eisenberg. Same Jesse Eisenberg, you know. You'd think he'd mature by now, but he really hasn't. Woody Harrelson as Merritt is still fun and still up to the task, which I appreciate. I'd really love a Zombieland 3. I think they should do one of those every 10 years. Why not? Dave Franco doesn't get as much to do as I would like, but man, I love Dave Franco. I think he's just fun to watch. And I always say he's better in a supporting role than he is in a starring role. And Isla Fisher, it's just good to have her back, man. She's been on the interview circuit with these guys and they are fun to watch in interviews. But Isla Fisher, number one, I think she has an adorable laugh. Number two, I find her to be very funny. Number three, looks fantastic. So as far as I'm concerned, yay. That's a win for me. As they come together, I do think there's a little bit of too much. Dominic Sessa's Bosco is very much Eisenberg's Atlas. They're like the same character. They kind of put a lot of the stuff together. And there's a lot of matching from the old duo to the new duo. I mean, it's been done before, you know, the Expendables 3 did the same concept, right? The old guard and the new guard coming together to thwart an enemy. And, you know, I think casting wise, I think the cast is great. There's nobody that drops the ball. I just think there's too many to really build a character base. And these movies don't do much with characters anyway. They just kind of like hit the ground running. And that's what this one does. And it's directed by Ruben Fleischer, who did the last Zombieland, if I'm not mistaken, but he also did Venom and, you know, Uncharted, I think. He's done some fun movies. He makes fun movies. This movie moves at a clip. It is not slow. The pacing moves fast. And I want to mention for Rosamund Pike does a South African accent because she's a diamond heiress, duh. And I will say, I don't know how accurate it was, but I thought it was really cool. I really enjoyed her accent. The whole time I'm like, wow, she's really getting into this. I mean, reminds me a lot of Lethal Weapon 2, so it sounds South African to me. Which is definitely the nod to Elon Musk, right? But she, as always, wonderful. Rosamund Pike is just, you know, a gem. She absolutely is. Ha ha! That was maybe a play on words. I don't know. But here's where you get my eh. The plotting is questionable. If you stop for too long and think about it, there's one. How do I phrase it? There's one dark thing that happens in the movie in particular where. Once you do get to the reveal, you're like, well, that was really kind of for nothing. And that makes the movie, like, nobody seems to care at the end. And it really bothered me. but I can't tell you what it is without spoiling it. But I think that was enough to tell you once you watch it and you get to the end, you'd be like, oh, I get it now. Yeah, there's a dark thing that happens and nobody seems to acknowledge it near the end, really. And it's just wild to me. I do think... you know, Jesse Eisenberg went on record as saying this, the reveal was mind-blowing. I do not agree with that. I think it's a little over the top. It's fun. I will say, like, the entire last act is probably the best portion of the movie up until a certain part. Like, once you get to a certain part, I'm like, okay, why is everybody still on stage? That makes no sense to me. Like, this is looking a little cringy. I do not like this movie as much as I like the first one in particular. Second one, I like it about the same as the second one. How's that? Really good villain, really captivating hijinks and reveals and illusions and that sort of thing. I mean, some of them, obviously, I would see would be very hard pressed to be pulled off if they did not have modern CGI. Short of, you know, being a magician, I don't know if a magician could actually do this, but whatever. That's part of the charm of the movies, is right. Like, could they do that? I don't know. Some of it is absolutely possible. It's just not memorable. I mean, it's fun-ish. It's a matinee. That's what it is. It's a matinee. Like, if I went to this thing on a Saturday afternoon, and I'm just trying to kill some time at a movie theater. Yeah, now you see me, now you don't. Hits right in the gut. It's not the characters. They're still fun. I love when they're together. I think they should have gotten a little bit more to do. I don't think there's really much character growth at all. It's really just about, it's kind of like Ocean's 13. Do you remember Ocean's 13? Ocean's 13 was all about the con. And that's what this is. Like, it's just a con from start to finish. There's really no depth. It's just about the con. And it's one of those things that relies a little too much on the previous movies, because I will tell you, you know, it had been a while since I saw the second one. It took me a while to remember some of this stuff. And as you're going through it, there's a lot of references and connections to previous movies. So this is not one of those sequels where they don't give it a 3 because they want it to stand out and be accessible to anyone. No, I think it's really hard to be accessible to this movie if you haven't seen the previous two. I really believe that. So if $10 is the full price of admission, I give Now You See Me, Now You Don't $5. I wanted to love this. I just liked it. And I would say, I mean, it's an easy watch. Like, this is definitely down the road, sitting there on your couch. This is an easy stream movie. I mean, I could see watching all three of them back to back and probably, you know, getting up and down, getting some popcorn, all that other jive. But if I'm going to a movie theater and I'm sitting in my chair and I'm kind of like into the moment, it was lacking a few things. And it missed the magic of that first film. Thank you. I'm here all night. Now You See Me, Now You Don't is in theaters right now. And then we're going to go on to Eternity, which is exactly how long it feels when I watch a Miles Teller movie. It feels like an eternity. But this is a different movie. This is stars Elizabeth Olsen and Miles Teller. In an afterlife where souls have 1 week to decide where to spend eternity, Joan is forced with the impossible choice between the man she spent her life with and her first love, who died young and has waited decades for her to arrive. I was telling Kyle, who saw this one, before we started doing this podcast, it reminds me a little bit of Upload, because they're kind of in the heaven waiting room, and Upload is just more of a digital heaven waiting room. But this one is very much about her being, she loved a guy, but she also was a widower or a widow. And so she lost a guy. So now she's got to decide between these two guys. Is that the idea here?
Yeah. So there's the husband that she had before for like 2 years. And now this other guy, Miles Teller, who she spent the last 65 years with as her second husband. So she's had a much longer relationship, but was her love deeper with the original, with her original first husband? And so now she has to decide which one of them she wants to spend her eternity with.
And the first husband is Callum Turner. So is this very much a will they, won't they? Her trying to find out, because she's going to be with one of them for the rest of eternity. Is the idea.
Yes. Right? Once you choose an eternity, you can't switch. So that's one thing they play a lot on, are all these like different eternities. They have so much fun with like all these random eternities like that people can choose from. So there's so much going on in the background when you see, it's like a big expo where everyone's trying to sell their eternity to the people who arrive there. And so you see all these random
it's like
eternities.
A trade show?
Yes, trade show where all these people have booths set up to sell their eternity, and you see them walking by so many different ones, and there's all kinds of things happening in the background. And then each person also has their own representative who's helping them. So Miles Teller, his is Divine Joy Randolph, who is absolutely hilarious in this. I always enjoy her, and she's like his representative, and he's trying to help him choose his eternity. And then she has John Early, who's been in so many different things. Like, you'd recognize him if you saw him. And so he's the one that's helping her. So they're trying to coach them into picking, like, he obviously wants her to pick her first husband, who's like the hot guy, rather than Miles Teller. And so,
sure.
So it's very much a comedy, but there is a surprising amount of emotion to the movie as she has to try to make this decision. So there's, and like the two guys are competing to tell her why they should pick them. So they're basically making fun of each other, trying to make themselves look like the better choice for her. And so there's this nice competition that goes on as they try to compete for her. And so the movie is very funny. And it's very creative in the whole atmosphere that's set up. I had never thought about Upload, but it does, now that you say that, it does kind of feel like that with the whole, like, it's very surreal, like the whole train station expo type of thing that this all takes place in as they're trying to choose which attorney to go to. And it all plays out. But yeah, I had a really good time with this. I didn't really know anything about it going into it, but I really ended up enjoying it. And usually A24 movies, like, they're
you immediately go,
they're often a miss. When I see that logo appear at the beginning, I'm like, oh, what's this? This is going to be some weird out there thing. But it was actually, like, it was charming rather than, like, just weird for the sake of being weird.
Okay. So if $10 is the full price for Mission, what do you give Eternity?
I'd say like probably a 7. I really enjoyed it.
If you might be someone who has not previously been a fan of, say, Miles Teller, just as a hypothetical, you think this will win him over?
I mean, I think he does a good job. Like, I think he's funny. He's entertaining. I wouldn't say I'd never had a problem because I forgot about the drumming movie, but, like Whiplash, but there's, like, usually I enjoy him in movies. I don't know why someone hypothetically would dislike him.
Well, I can give you a list. We'll do it after the show. I'll give you a list of whoever would, you know, think such things. I mean, it's just it's pretty terrible when you say things about actors like that, but sometimes they just hit you wrong or they just make a lot of bad movies. But anyway, all right, so that's Eternity. And now we're going to go to what you've been watching. Troy, come back on the bus here.
I'm here.
Pluribus.
Ah, yes.
So that's the new Apple TV show from Vince Gilligan and the creator of Breaking Bad. You saw, well, I've seen this too. Kyle, did you see this one?
Yeah, I watched the first two episodes, so, yeah.
Wow. Do you want to try and give a synopsis without ruining anything? Can you?
COVID happens in a lab, and then one person doesn't have COVID, and then they try to convince her that she should get COVID. That's basically it.
Oh, that's actually very good without, it's nothing at all what happens, but it's exactly what happens. All right. It's just basically a global pandemic, right? And there's one person, essentially, which is what pluribus means, right? Right? Out of many comes one. What did you think of the show?
I loved the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
The first episode was like the countdown, the discovery, the science, how's this thing going to spread? And then it just kind of from there was like, okay, now we're focusing in on the one person who hasn't been affected in this area. And
it's played by Rhea Seehorn from
who's great
in Better Call Saul. Stellar actress.
And she's great in here as well. The whole sequence, like when the event finally happens, which I still have questions about, like, why did the event happen differently than the earlier parts of the movie and the transmission and how it all works? That was a little bit like, okay, are we changing rules here already? Like, I don't understand.
I think they're just going to flesh it out as you go.
I think so too. Yeah. But then we get to the second episode, and the second episode, it's like, okay, now we're getting into the, like, the drama part of the show, right? Where this is the, how do I deal with what's happening to me? How do I interact with the people that are trying to get me to convert? And how do I convert if I wasn't able to convert when the global incident happened in the first place? And that second episode for me felt a little bit more tell me versus show me to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I like where it's going. I like the characters. I like the interesting dynamics between who helps who and how the people that are obviously infected versus the ones that are not, because there are other people that are not infected. I think it's got an interesting premise enough to keep going to understand more. And maybe we'll see like different cracks around, you know, maybe not everybody is as happy as it says to be. Maybe there's different strains of this virus. Like, who knows? It could go a lot of directions. And that's a great thing. When you don't know where a show is going, that's the thing that keeps you entertained and along for the ride.
What'd you think, Kyle?
Yeah, I went into this knowing absolutely nothing about it except that it had the woman from from Better Call Saul in it. So I didn't know what to expect. I had no clue what the tone was going to be, and I was surprised like that it was this whole like almost X-Files like yeah. tone to it. And so I was pulled right in as weird stuff started to happen, and you're trying to figure out what's going on, and then. Like the second episode when it expands out the world a little bit more. But yeah, I'm definitely drawn in. I'm interested to see where it goes from here.
What I've found fascinating with this show is so many people have come to it because of Vince Gilligan, right? And they know him from Breaking Bad. They know him from Better Call Saul, which are great. I mean, Breaking Bad, one of the best shows of 20th century, and Better Call 21st Century, and Better Call Saul is, from what I hear, up there as well. But I remember him and know him first from X-Files. Like, he wrote some of the coolest episodes of X-Files. And I think he even wrote Host, which is one of my favorites. He's an excellent writer, and he writes science fiction wonderfully. And it's cool to see him kind of go back to the well that he used to play in. And I think he's trying to challenge himself to see if he can do it. I agree with Troy. I think the second episode isn't as strong as the first one. The first one is just absolutely brilliant premiere episode. I mean, through and through, I was captivated, and I couldn't take my eyes off the screen. On the same token, I thought episode two was still pretty strong. And episode three, which is out at the time you hear this, you know, keeps moving forward. It's a solid show. Like, it's really entertaining, and really, I do not know where it's headed and how much TV can say that. So I think you got three recommendations across the board for that one. And I saw Frankenstein on Netflix. Did either one of you watch Frankenstein?
No, didn't even know
what's that. Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein. Mm-mm. I'll tell you this. Netflix has a good original movie. Yeah, that happened. It's absolutely stunning how they can actually get a good movie when they have such a really piss poor record of original films. But del Toro, I mean, I will tell you, this is a movie I wish I had seen in the theater. I think this would play huge at Christmas time. But then again, I think there's been about 12 Frankenstein movies in the last 20 years, and none of them have been hits. So maybe I'm wrong.
Isn't there The Bride that's coming?
Like, yeah, there's The Bride. Yeah, that's coming out from Maggie Gyllenhaal, I think. But this is a Guillermo del Toro adapted Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. It stars Oscar Isaac as Victor Frankenstein, Jacob Elordi as the monster. And if you didn't know, it was originally supposed to be Andrew Garfield who played the monster, the creature, sorry. And he had to bow out like right before they started filming. So they had to pivot to Mr. Elordi. And also you've got Christoph Waltz in here and Mia Goth. I mean, it's a fan. Charles Dance is in this. It's a stacked cast. What I will say is it's probably one of the most faithful adaptations of the book I've seen. And if you've never read the book, it's really a great book. Like, it's a really brilliant film, and it's really about humanity and what it means to be human and who gets to qualify. And there's a lot to it. And del Toro, of course, is known for, you know, like The Shape of Water and Hellboy and all these fantastical environments. So he knows that world. He does a lot of it practical. There's hardly any CGI, like overwhelming CGI. It's all like background ancillary stuff. And it's just a beautiful film. I mean, it's beautifully shot, wonderfully acted. Oscar Isaac is just, he crushes it. So does Jacob Elordi as the creature. It's a magnificent film, honestly. And it's the rare Netflix film, I would say you have to watch it. If you have Netflix, you have to watch it. It's just that good. I mean, from start to finish. And they really do a great job of making the creature both warm and beautiful and sweet in many ways, but also absolutely terrifying when he needs to be. Like, there are moments where I'm like, oh shit, he's going to mess everyone up. That's going to be the end of them. Yeah. And it's very well done. I can't recommend it enough. And I wish it had gotten a theatrical release, because this would be amazing on a huge screen. Maybe in 3D, Kyle. Maybe in 3D.
Is it in color or black and white?
It's in color. It's in color.
Then maybe I'll check it out.
Didn't you just see the Chainsaw movie?
Is it in 3D is the question.
It is not in 3D, no. But it could have been. They could have made this. This would look great in 3D. That's what I'm saying. And Kyle loves 3D. So didn't you see that Chainsaw Man movie?
Yes, I saw just before this, I went and saw Chainsaw Man in 3D just because it was in 3D. And they also offered an English dub. So I wasn't watching it in Japanese with subtitles in 3D. But yeah, it definitely requires that you have actually seen the TV series.
So you didn't know anything about it when you walked in?
No, I had no clue what was going on. Like, it's this guy, it's like demon hunters, like, that work for the government, but he's a teenager who has, like, a ripcord on his chest that he can pull, and then chainsaws come out of his arms and head, and he fights demons. He's after this woman that turns herself into a bullet. It was interesting, but it was also much more of a drama than I was expecting, because it was all about this guy falling in love with this woman, who then is this demon that he has to fight. But it was much more dramatic than I was expecting, just nonstop action. I mean, the final act of the film is all action-packed, but a good two-thirds of the film is just this drama of him, like, falling in love with this woman, and other drama going on with other characters.
Interesting. You like 3D, then there you go. Anime is really having a moment, man. I mean, every time one of these anime movies comes out, it does pretty well. So
Maybe you should like more animated movies, Aaron.
Maybe I should. I won't. Maybe I should. Maybe you can cast a spell. Huh? There's full circle. All right, guys. Well, it's time to wrap this up, but I want to thank you guys for being here. Thanks, Kyle from NoReruns.net.
Thanks for having me.
That didn't sound very like excited at all. You're just
Thanks for having me.
I gave up. Whatever, dude. Whatever.
How many times are these guys going to ask me to come back?
And Troy, of course, thanks for coming back.
Yeah, thanks for the time off last week. Good to hear Brian come back and have some fun. It was a good Brandon Fraser bit. That was nice.
Several people commented on that. I was pretty proud of that. And some people didn't catch. I had With Honors in there. I had Bedazzled in there. I was pretty proud of all those.
I was glad to see Brian be a blast from the past.
Okay. See? You just always one step too far. Always. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. And remember, the next time you head to a theater or stream comfortably on your couch, but if you're going to stream, watch Frankenstein. Buy popcorn.
I did buy some of that AMC microwave popcorn today at Walmart. I haven't tried it yet.
It's not going to taste like poor stock prices, that's for sure.